When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind a beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, we haven't spoke since the weekend, but we both had a good couple of days of football in that you didn't have a game and Palace beat West Ham 5-2, which is unexpected and pleasant. I say we haven't spoke, Kieran, I'm lying, because we spoke 10 minutes ago. We've just interviewed Stuart Andrew, the Minister of Sport, which was very, very interesting. He told us a couple of things that I didn't think he would tell us, to be honest. It's worth listening to the interview tomorrow, simply to find out the Deputy Chief Whip's reaction to Coventry's goal being disallowed. The Deputy Chief Whip being a Coventry fan, demanding that Stuart do something about it. Get the House of Commons open. Get VAR on the phone.
Go to Stockley Park.
Yes, but it's a very interesting interview, Kieran, and I don't think I'm giving much away to say that there's one answer that Reading fans will be delighted to hear. That's what they call a teaser in the business, Kieran. I was tempted. I know I feel sorry for Reading fans now, but no, the producer guy says, no, the whole idea is you promise something and then they listen to the pod to get the answer. It's like, okay. All right, it's about 28 minutes, Reading fans, if you've got other things to do and you want to. I'm not very good at the marketing stuff, am I? It's a big news week, Kieran.
It's always a big news week.
Yeah, that's true. That sounds like it should be a Moonpig card, shouldn't it? It's always a big news week in football finance. Happy birthday. Love, Gran. VAR will be coming up, as I'm sure you'll understand. This first story, Kieran, about the National League and FA Cup replays, I have to admit, came as a surprise to me.
Not as much as a surprise as it came to the owners and executives of many National League clubs.
Yeah.
So the National League has said that it is backing the decision to scrap FA Cup replays from the first round onwards. We've seen many tweets from individual clubs in the National League with the opposition to the scrapping. The National League board, who I think it's fair to say there is an element of disconnect. We have been we've been contacted by our secret National League directors, who I think it's fair to say are fuming at the decision. And again, it's not necessarily the decision itself. It's the lack of consultation. It's the lack of engagement. It's the lack of cooperation. There is a problem in respect of there are too many fixtures. And in terms of the hierarchy, as who determines what happens in the world of football, whether we like it or not, and we may have got our country back, but it's FIFA, then it's UEFA,
yeah,
then it's the Premier League and the FA and so on. So UEFA have said we want four more slots for midweek matches. Two of those are going to coincide where you would normally anticipate third round replays to take place, potentially fourth round replays, and therefore they have to go. We can look at it from the romantic point of view, but that ship has sailed. Football is now, rightly or wrongly, dictated to by financial decisions. If they're going to have to go, then how do we deal with the monetary consequences of that? The six or seven teams in the Premier League who are most impacted by this, they say, well, we just get all the money and the rest of you, tough. And this is where I think the problem lies. I think the National League have been persuaded by the Premier League and the FA that, well, because the Premier League is now giving an extra £30 million a year to the FA, that money could be distributed. Yeah, I said to you on Sunday when we recorded the show for earlier this week that we just need to come up with some practical solutions in the sense that we still want to give fans and players the opportunity to play against those big teams. You know, if I was a non-league player or a player in League Two, you'd want to play against Arsenal or Manchester United. So we don't want to deny that. Can we ensure that that is still maintained? Can we ensure that the monetary offers are perhaps more beneficial? So I was on a panel last night with the chief executive of Oxford United. They played Arsenal in the third round of the FA Cup last season. It was a home fixture. He said, we grossed 400 grand. We paid out our expenses. He then said, I had to write out a cheque to Arsenal for £180,000.
What?
Because you have to split the gate receipts.
Oh, of course. In the FA Cup, saying, yes, of course.
You know, what's that going to do as far as Arsenal? I would have loved to being able to go and have a discussion to play that match at the Emirates. And okay, the chances of us winning would have been reduced a bit, but from the point of view of our fans, we'd have been able to take 9,000 fans there. So, you know, Oxford fans would have had a great day out. The players would have had the experience of playing at the Emirates. There's still the chance of a shock. And the share of the gate receipts would have been £1.5 million to Oxford instead of 180 grand. And that's a practical solution to it. The chances are Oxford did lose the match, so therefore they didn't get a chance to go back for a replay. Here, they get more money. They still get to play the big club. It frees up a slot. Can we do it with some sort of seeding for the third round? Yes, we can, because there's 20 clubs that proceed from the second round, and there are 20 Premier League clubs that enter the third round. So just get your heads, you know, as Stuart Andrew, the sport minister, was saying with regards to the issue between the Premier League and the EFL, just sort it out. Just get around the table. Act like grown-ups. And you can find a compromise if you work hard with it, where everybody wins, and it doesn't just have to be six clubs in the Premier League are better off, and the rest of you, who cares?
You used the word persuaded there, Kieran, but if Uncle Terry, may he rest in peace, taught us anything, he taught us that there's a fine line, particularly when it comes to planning permission, there's a fine line between persuaded and bribed. Now, the National League won't know how much of that £33 million that the Premier League donated, bunged to the FA, that they will be getting. So what's in it for the National League to back the decision to scrap FA Cup replays in the first and second round before the big teams are even involved? Have they explained why this decision has been taken?
No, I mean, they did say something along the lines of, well, fixture congestion impacts us as well, and I take that on board. But the opportunity for a National League team to have two matches, yeah, especially if you've got somebody like, you know, Portsmouth or Derby, or,
of course,
yeah, there are many,
yeah,
many big clubs in League One and Two. Where 100,000 pounds is a lot of money for those clubs. It does seem a bit strange to not consult with your members. You are a board. You are supposed to represent the interests of your members. And I know this is an old and hoary chestnut. We saw with regards to the film Gate Money that there were some very strange decisions made with regards to the money that was given out during COVID to the National League. We had the person who did the independent investigation on the show, and I think he was as candid as he could be with regards to, it seems very strange, you know, why a board which was dominated by a few clubs who just coincidentally seem to be the beneficiaries of the model that was used. Self-interest exists everywhere. And it looks like there's self-interest from the few with regards to this decision and is ignoring the broader issues, because clubs in, especially in National League North and National League South, are being effectively bypassed by this decision.
I'll give you Cray Wanderers versus Charlton Athletic last year in the FA Cup. Why would you deny Cray the chance of a replay against Charlton Athletic? That just makes no sense to me, whatever. Because also at that time of the season, you know, early in January, there hasn't been time for fixture congestions to build up. It makes no sense. This next story, Kieran, involves a lower league club as well. And it's a heartbreaking tale of the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. So we've got a team up in the northeast whose fans will have been celebrating wildly at one moment and then crying into their beer the next.
That's right. If we go back to 1959-60, Gateshead were part of the Football League. And yeah, again, we're old enough to remember when there was not automatic promotion and relegation. You had to be voted back in or out, and Gateshead were voted out. They managed to sneak into the playoffs, and fair play to them. They did that on merit. They did that in terms of what they achieved on the pitch. And then you get out the rule book in terms of what you have to do in order to satisfy the criteria to be admitted to the EFL. And one of the rules is that you must have the ability to play at your stadium for the next 10 years. And in the case of Gateshead, the ground is owned by the council. They then effectively sub it out to an operator who leases it out to the club. And as far as the council are concerned, they've got no intention to change the use of the stadium. But because there is no definitive lease between the football club and the landlord for the next 10 years, even though there's no evidence that any of the parties want to change the circumstances, the EFL has come down with a classic computer says no. And if this was the case, then why didn't the National League say something before the weekend? And the National League initially says, right, under our rule book, we're not going to allow Gateshead to go through the playoff system, which is because the National League playoff system, I think, is absolutely brilliant because it does allow, you know, more clubs to get involved. And therefore, we're going to give Solihull a bye through to the next round. And then a few hours later, they said, actually, we don't understand our own rule book. We are now going to bring Solihull back, and we're going to give Altrincham a bye into the next round. And you know, again, that's revenue which is being denied. Not a huge amount of money, but in terms of excitement, in terms of, you know, we go back to that Coventry versus Manchester United match in which neither of us had any skin in the game, but we were still invested in it, and you know, the fans of Gateshead and their opponents would have been hugely invested in it. And it's the chewing your fingernails every time the opposition get over the halfway line, which creates memorable nights. And the fans of Gateshead and the players are being denied that experience. One of the things that, you know, we've already said is get round the table and thrash it out. Why didn't the National League know that Gateshead would not be able to go into the playoffs? And had not satisfied. You know, surely, this, as part of their due diligence, their responsibilities as a board, they have abjectly failed here in terms of communication and assistance for their members.
Well, we talk about communities as well, Kieran, and Sutton getting into the National League, getting into the EFL, that was brilliant for football around here. Palace fans, Wimbledon fans, maybe not so much so. Palace fans are absolutely delighted to have Sutton in the EFL. Palace women play at Sutton now, so there's links between the clubs. Bromley are in the playoffs, so that would be also another shot in the arm for the local area. For the North East, if Gateshead were to get into the EFL, that's a fantastic story. If you've got Sunderland, Newcastle and Gateshead, that's great for the whole area. But there's two things I don't understand, Kieran. If I could almost accept it, if there is a problem with the ground itself, and we know there are some grounds that need work, that's fine, but it's not. It's a technicality on the lease. And if this lease stands for 10 years, you have to say to yourself, and I'm sure Gates are the same, well, what's the point of us playing football next season if we can't get any further than we are now? I think they had a remaining fixture this week that they, I don't know if it didn't, that they said they had no intention of fulfilling. And I can quite understand that. Because so they start next season. Why do they start next season? This is good boy, Finley. Good boy.
Kevin the postman.
Good boy, Finley. I mean, if you've got, if they haven't got floodlights, fine. They can build floodlights in 2 years. But this is an issue. Just get something in print from the people who lease the ground.
I agree entirely. And we saw with Luton Town getting promoted to the Premier League, they had to upgrade some of their facilities.
Yeah, everyone does.
And
yeah.
What the Premier League did, said, look, first couple of matches, guys, you have to go and play away from home.
Yeah. Same thing happened with Barrow when they got into the EFL. So it's doable, and it's not, just get the landlord to sign something to say this is a legally binding thing that they will be playing it. What's in it for the landlord to not fulfil the lease of the clubs in the EFL? It just makes no sense. And it's a shame because the EFL have been getting nothing but praise from you for the past few weeks. They seem to have really got their act together. But this is, they're wrong here. We have a good relationship with them, Kieran, so it would be great to hear from them either directly to you or on the show as to why this is happening. But it's not a good look. You mentioned VAR, Kieran. Technically, this next story doesn't have a financial angle, except that Forest may be facing a huge fine. But they're, I like to think there's an over-enthusiastic 20-year-old in their social media department whose dad had the hump and phoned him up and said, you've got to tweet about this. But calling the integrity of a match official into doubt, it surely will lead to a fine from the FA, will it, Kieran? They can't let this one lie, surely.
Well, I think there will be repercussions. Before Friday night, I think probably the only people that knew that Stuart Atwell was a Luton Town fan was Stuart Atwell and Mark Clattenburg.
Yeah.
And now it appears that the whole country knows who Stuart Atwell supports. And there is nothing wrong with him supporting Luton Town. There's a broader issue in respect of VAR, and I'm much more sanguine and relaxed about VAR than I suspect most other people. I see, in my view, it has reduced the number of errors, but you will not reduce the number of errors to zero, because there are some decisions where you could watch them 100 times. And you could, with 100 different people, and you wouldn't agree whether that was a ref, whether that was a penalty or non-penalty, whether that was a handball or a handball. I watched it. I thought that probably one of those decisions, if I'd been refereeing, I probably would have given one of them. But you can absolutely understand an alternate point of view. To the inference that the team that the referee or the VAR person supports. And remember, initially, these were all referees' decisions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So this is Forrest saying, well, the referee, we didn't like his decision, and the backup from Stockby Park, we didn't agree with that decision either. So why are they making reference? You know, Mark Clattenburg is a Newcastle United fan, and he said that. Has there ever been a match in which he was refereeing where Newcastle United were involved in promotion or a relegation fight, where he was involved in terms of potential clubs which had an impact upon that? I suspect there may have been. That's not calling his integrity into question, and nobody did at the time. And I think one of the things you can dislike referees, you can disagree with their decisions. I remember David Ellery. I used to loathe the way that he would conduct himself.
Everybody did, yeah.
Towards players, I still thought he got the vast majority of the decisions right, and I never thought he was biased or corrupt. And it's this implication. And if you want to improve the overall quality of referees, what you don't do is you create an environment in which those people who are, those young people who are 14, 15, 16, who say, I'm never going to make it as a football player. I love the game. I think I'll have a go at refereeing. And, I did that when I was 16. And I got, like many people, I got chased out of the game by... when you got offered out in a car park after a game by some bloke who frankly was as crap at football as I was, you go, it's not worth. And what we now have is institutionalized taking down of referees, calling into question their professionalism in terms of their integrity. Referees do not cheat. Players cheat. Players miss absolute sitters, and they get a fraction of the abuse that is now easy to direct. Managers get decisions wrong in terms of the players they pick, the setup for the opposition, the substitutions they make, the tweaks that they make at half time. They don't get the same level of abuse as the referees do. So I can't. Would I have been annoyed as a Forest fan with the decisions? Yes. When people start coming using the word corruption, and there is an owner of a football club who this morning has used, or sorry, a former owner of a football club in Nottingham who has used the word corruption in a tweet, and I've had it out with him. I think you are taking the game down. There are decisions we disagree with within the Premier League. The Premier League is not corrupt. The EFL is not corrupt. The National League is not corrupt. You can fundamentally disagree with them on a range of issues, and you can agree with them on others. But there's a difference between having a different viewpoint and screaming corruption just because things don't go your way.
Well, you've now got Mr. Marinakis, the owner of Nottingham Forest, threatening to sue Sky because of Gary Neville's comments about them behaving like a mafia family afterwards. I don't think it's a good idea for Forrest to have brought in Mark Clattenburg as an advisor. I thought it was a terrible idea for Mark Clattenburg to double down by writing that in the mail on Monday. And if producer guys listening, I promise we will get back to the financial ramifications of the story in a moment, as we're not allowed to talk about football. But two things. Anthony Taylor... It illustrates the hierarchy of VAR. Because Anthony Taylor, you can see, I thought two of them were penalties, but you can see with the handball, he clearly says shoulder to no one in particular, but he's talking to VAR, hit his shoulder. The other two, he both made the gestures, he's played the ball. So he's telling VAR beforehand what he wants VAR to tell him back, basically. Yeah. And this is what used to happen when Mike Dean was refereeing, because he knew, and he's indicated this himself, he knew that other referees were too intimidated by Mike Dean to publicly disagree with his decision. So that's an issue. Also, and we do discuss this with the sports minister, if anybody's got a right to feel hard done by VAR, it's Coventry, because Coventry strikers are playing in the game. Man United strikers all year have played with VAR. So they know they've got to be 6 inches onside, basically, to get away with it. Coventry strikers haven't been doing that. Coventry strikers have been playing old-fashioned offside. If that was a league game that Coventry involved in, that goal stands. So as far as I'm concerned, that's where the outrage is for me, because one set of strikers has got a material advantage against the other, and that's really not fair. And also, it robbed the effort. Yes, it's all very well for people like Martin Keown to say offside's offside, but... It robbed the FA Cup of one of its greatest moments. It robbed the whole country of a minute of pleasure. Coming back to the financial angle, Kieran, I mean, it will be the FA, presumably, that does the punishing here, not the Premier League. But this has got to be a huge fine, isn't it, that Forrest are looking at?
Yes. I mean, again, the final words in the initial tweet from Nottingham Forest we are considering our options.
Yeah.
Well, what does that mean? Yeah, that's sort of an inferred threat of something. It's a bit like the Premier League's constant unforeseen circumstances. When just be specific. Okay, if you're considering your options, set out your options.
These are yeah.
Don't try to be a pair of heavies. Yeah, we're sort of trying to lean on someone. So Forrest have doubled down in subsequent tweets and coming across, it's all about the integrity of the integrity of the game has been taken down by Nottingham Forest. And as somebody that has felt that they were harshly done to with regards to financial fair play in terms of coming up from the Championship, and I've been quite vocal in terms of, I think, that the clubs that are promoted from the EFL, I've been positive towards them. So this is not a vendetta against Nottingham Forest. Nottingham Forest themselves played in a match at Wembley two seasons ago against Huddersfield Town, where had there been VAR, there could have been two penalties given to Huddersfield Town. No, Huddersfield Town did not come out at the end of that match and say corruption or infer corruption. And that's the issue I really have, as I think many people do.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Meanwhile, Kieran, if Forest fans and Everton fans think they're hard done by with their points deduction, there's a club in the Netherlands who will see their points deduction and raise it by several more.
Yes, Vitesse Arnhem, who were already bottom of the Eredivisie, have been given an 18 points deduction following an investigation. Now, first of all, you've got to give credit to both The Guardian and the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, who have done the hard yards. They've trailed, follow the money. They've followed the companies which have been set up hither and thither in our usual suspects of the Cayman Islands and British Virgin Islands and so on. And this is all to do with who owns or who controls Vitesse Arnhem. Historically, there was always what we might refer to as an entente cordiale between Chelsea, owned by Roman Abramovich, and Vitesse Arnhem, not owned by Roman Abramovich, according to Chelsea. And clubs do sign sort of letters of cooperation. The accusations which have been made and effectively discovered is that Vitesse Arnhem has incorrectly submitted information with regards to its relationship with Roman Abramovich, in effect saying that during a period of time in which Abramovich was subject to sanctions by the EU with regards to his assets, that he was still controlling Vitesse Arnhem, even though Vitesse Arnhem said he's never done anything to do with us officially. And therefore, the Dutch authorities have said, under those circumstances, and again, this is talking about the integrity of the game, because one of the clubs has not been accurate in terms of what it said. We are going to give you a very severe penalty. Look, they probably would have been relegated anyway. But an 18-point penalty is indicative of a football board which is saying, we are not accepting any of this nonsense.
I believe there's an opportunity, Kieran, for them to be the only club ever to finish a season on minus points, which if I was a Vitesse fan, I would be thinking, might go for that then, might as well. That's the only thing we can take out of this season is to be a quiz question on pointless later on in our... Also, I think we probably need to ask some of our Dutch listeners what the Dutch for entente cordiale is. It doesn't seem right to me. It's all about entente cordiale between an English club and a Dutch club. I presume there's been no response from Mr. Abramovich about this, so...
No. An enigmatic smile, I think, is the most you can hope for from him.
Yeah, I mean, it's that terrible thing, Kieran. It becomes funny because it's not a club we're particularly aware of. But for Vitesse fans, it's heartbreaking. And again, if anybody out there from the club would like to come on and talk to us, we'd only be too happy to talk to them. This next news item, Kieran, I'm almost heartbroken that this story's back. Because this is one of the saddest stories we dealt with in the early months of the pod. And both of us hoped that we'd seen the back of it forever. But it's Cardiff City and FC Nantes, Kieran, and I'll leave you to it.
Yes. So it appears now that Cardiff City are suing FC Nantes for the sum of €120 million. The reason for this is that Cardiff are effectively holding FC Nantes responsible for the death of Emiliano Sala, you know, in terms of what happened with that tragic. And remember, there was another person killed as well in terms of his flight from Cardiff back to France when it took place. Now, at the time, Cardiff were in the Premier League, and what they have done, and we are reaching extreme realms of strangeness here. They've employed some analysts to determine the impact that Emiliano Sala would have had on their relegation fight the season in question.
Yeah.
And according to the analysts, if they had signed him and he had played all of the matches, they would have had somewhere between a 54 to 62% of avoiding relegation. That's ignoring the fact that he could have got injured in the first match, presumably. We are talking here about the death of a young man who's had his career, has had the love of all of his family and his friends and his partner and his dog and, you know, everybody that cared for him and loved him, you know, tragically taken away through an event. And we've now got this rather tawdry issue. There's been comments made with regards to... His agent, Willie Mackay, in terms of was he involved in organising the flight? You know, I've said that there are many agents in football, many of whom are good. I wouldn't include Willie Mackay in that group, but yeah, that's a personal opinion. It may have been shared to me by other agents and other people I know in football, but I can't confirm or deny that. Yeah, where did they get that figure of 120.2 million? Well, they worked out, you know, an extra year in the Premier League, an extra year in terms of parachute payments, multiply that by somewhere between 54 and 62%, and that's how they've got a number. I think this will be proceeding in the French courts. It's awful. And if you put on your business hat, you say, look, it's just business and it's a huge sum of money. We have an obligation to do it. If you are going to do it, here's a suggestion. Don't push it through the media beforehand. You know, just leave it to the right man and wait until the court case starts and just deal with it as quietly and respectfully as you can.
Purely from a business perspective, Kieran, and I'm really trying it hard to find the right words here that won't get me into trouble. But purely from a business perspective, there's no possible way they could prove what impact Salah would have had on the rest of the season, because you simply don't know. What he may have been homesick and not liked the pace of the game in England and Wales. He may have split up with his girlfriend. He may have got food poisoning. There's all sorts of things that can happen. But beyond that, I know two Cardiff fans, and I suspect that their views are shared by the vast majority of Cardiff fans. They don't want this to happen. They really don't want this to happen because they're aware that two people died. They're aware that people are still grieving, and they're aware that it would be a much better look for their club if their club said, look, we think this is what we would have lost, but that we're leaving it at that. Because it just, it's not who. And seriously, I mean, if they were to get that 120 million euros, I don't want to sit in a stand that's been funded by the death of a young. It's just wrong, Kieran. What also seems wrong, this next story, I said last week, I think this is the fourth time I've said that Torquay's administration has been formally confirmed. But yet again, it seems that Torquay's administration has been finally confirmed at Companies House, Kieran.
Yes, I mean, I think this is a case of the paperwork finally going through. But just linking it through to an earlier story, if Torquay had a FA Cup replay or two in the past couple of seasons, we might not be having this conversation. And again, it comes back to the broader issue of the distribution of money for the Premier Cup competition. You know, it was the matches of the week. You know, the Manchester United Coventry match was a classic for a variety of reasons. The Manchester City Chelsea match was you know a bit so-so, but you know they happen. If you win the if you win the FA Cup, you get £2 million. If you finish 16th instead of 15th in the Premier League, you get £3.4 million. So, isn't therefore a case of saying, well, actually, you know, it's very much about winning the competition and lifting the cup. Why can't some of that £2 million and the £1 million for the runners up, why can't that be distributed to a greater extent for the earlier rounds of the FA Cup? You don't have to necessarily increase the size of the pot itself. And again, this is one way of addressing issues of grassroots. We've heard about this extra £31 million, which could be going to clubs in lower leagues, including the likes of Torquay. But what we've not heard is any detail. There's no meat on the bones. It's just vague comments coming out. And there is far too much politics involved.
But as Charlie Baker, Talk Sport, said to you, Torquay fan, and he said it through gritted teeth, that Exeter City were saved from oblivion by an FA Cup replay against Manchester United. And as we've said several times this week, it's not an ideal financial model that you're relying on a replay to see you through hard times, but these things happen. This next story, Kieran, if I was a Radio 2 DJ, if I was the likes of Gary Davis, I'd be getting my effects pedal ready. My little, they've all got a little effects box, Kieran, with things like wah, wah, you know, to indicate something's gone wrong in their life. But this one, I'd be getting ready to press the hallelujah chorus button for this one, Kieran, because come on, tell us what Southend have done, Kieran.
They've finally submitted their 2022. Remember, we are recording this in April 2024. They've finally submitted their 2022 accounts.
Baby steps, Kieran.
Baby steps. 12 months late. And why have they done this? You might be asking yourself. Well, yeah, as far as the accounts were concerned, they announced a £2.7 million loss. But the takeover has not gone through as yet. And lo and behold, the Southend owner, Wrong Martin, as I prefer to refer to him as, is involved in a discussion with the council along the lines of wanting approval for 130 houses on the sites of somewhere, or Fossett's Hall, I think it's called, as part of the overall deal. Now, what he would need to be able to do as part of his submitting evidence to the council is say, well, okay, well, this is the state of Southend United's finances. Look, the club's losing money. Yeah, and it is losing money. And he has put money into the club. You know, I've been through the cash flow statement. Money has gone into the club in the last year. But it's the fact that you've got somebody in Martin who is playing a game. You know, there's been so many deals done at the door of the courthouse, where, you know, it's, okay, here's the money, owed to HMRC, owed to other people, and so on. And, you know, if only there could be some mechanism in which rogue owners could be held to a greater standard of account,
yeah,
I would welcome such a scenario.
Leaving aside the character of the owner, just the actual accounts themselves, are they any better or worse than you'd expect to see from a club at that level? Is £2.7 million a huge loss for a club like Southend?
That they have been making losses on a regular basis. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, these are 21-22. So this was sort of the last season. I think it was the last season they had in the in League Two. By League Two standards, it's certainly towards the top end of the losses. But yeah, fans were getting fed up, and people were making decisions at the club which clearly were not working out. So I've been putting forward creating a spreadsheet this morning, in fact, just in case anybody had wanted any numbers in an interview with the minister in respect of lower league football. The average losses in League One, which were, you know, about 3 or 4 years ago, around about £700,000 a club, they've gone up to £5 million. So, you know, we are seeing losses in the lower leagues expand. And that's a broader discussion. That's a broader issue which needs to be solved in some way, shape or form.
I noticed you looked a bit distracted and furtive during our interview with the sportsman. Is that what you were doing? You were creating a spreadsheet, were you, while we were having a grown-up conversation? Shame on you.
Sorry.
All right. Well, you know you can't, when you go to that Royal Garden party, don't take anything with you. No laptops, no pieces of paper, no cigarette cartons you scribble on the back. Just pay full attention to the royal family and the Baroness. This next news story, Kieran, I'm filing under the category of looks like it's good news, but I've known you long enough to realise I may be completely wrong. And it's that...
No,
you do? It's Rochdale. So
It's Rochdale. It's thumbs up in the Prowler household.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
I'm getting here.
That sounds that sounds like a terrible euphemism, I have to say, Kieran. I don't like the idea of anything being up in the Prowler household, to be perfectly honest.
So, yes, Sir Peter Ogden, he was originally born in Rochdale. He has been successful. He's now going to make a formal offer to buy shares in the football club. There have been an increased number of shares created, which means that if he buys those shares, he can get a controlling interest, and therefore he can start to instigate his ideas for the club. So I think this is a step forwards. I'm very fond of Rochdale. One of my favourite bands, The Chameleons, comes from the Rochdale area. My ex-wife comes from Rochdale. You know, I know the area quite well. And it's always been one of those football clubs where you wanted to tick it off and so on. So they do look as if they're going to go for this. Rochdale is not a wealthy area in Greater Manchester, and so therefore the ability to generate sufficient funds to become sustainable, I think, was always a challenge for what had sort of become a quasi fan owned club, and I think this gives an opportunity to move forwards.
Can I suggest, Kieran, for future reference, that you change the order of that to, first of all, my wife comes from Rochdale. Secondly,
ex-wife.
In that case, fine. Oh, great. Of course, there's a Baroness is from Edinburgh. Oh, in that case, fine. Yes. Keep the order as it is then. Yeah, because I was going to suggest the Baroness wouldn't be happy if she came after the Chameleons. But there you go. This does seem to me, Kieran, as a Rochdale, and I mean this as no slur against the lovely country of America and its people, but there was American people sniffing around Rochdale. This seems to me then to be the ideal outcome, that you have a successful business person with a good track record who's from the area who wants to buy the club.
Yes, and you know, we talk about people wanting a legacy. It's very difficult explaining wanting to return to your roots, and I can't explain why I've come back to be close to Brighton. given that I work in Liverpool. Yeah, it's a dumb thing in so many ways, but sometimes you do get a sense of calling, a sense of wanting to go back to those places which meant so much to you when you were growing up. And I think this is Sir Peter Ogden and his wife and family. They're acknowledging that and want to put something back into the place which gave them the opportunity to be successful.
Two more stories, Kieran, both involving commercial activities that will earn a lot of money. And the first is at Tottenham Hotspur.
Yes. Spurs have applied to the council that they currently have permission from the council to host up to 16 non-football events. And yeah, we've seen concerts, NFL, boxing events and so on. And they have been very successful from a financial point of view. You take a look at the amount of commercial revenue that Spurs have generated since moving from the old White Hart Lane to the new White Hart Lane with its, you know, bigger facilities and more flexible facilities. And you know, I think it's future-proofing of the stadium. And that has allowed Spurs to accelerate their finances. For the first time, I think, in Premier League history last season, Spurs had a higher wage bill, for example, than Arsenal. And I know it wasn't necessarily reflected on the pitch, but you know, let's not be naive. The ability to pay high wages tends to mean that you've got the ability to play, you know, more to acquire more elite players. What you do with them is a separate issue. That's a football discussion. So they have submitted a planning application now to increase that number of events from 16 to 30. So we will now be having more non-football matches at the stadium than football matches. There are pluses and minuses for this. You know, first of all, from the position of Spurs, if they are hosting an event, they are able to go and charge a hosting fee. Now, that's likely to be, you know, seven figures. Then there's the issue of catering. You know, we know that Spurs make around about £1 million a match gross from football matches which are taking place at the stadium. Well, if you've got a concert which is taking place there, you're going to have, you know, normally three or four support acts. So therefore, people are going to be there instead of for 2 to 2.5 hours. They're likely to be there for around about 6 hours. So you can see that the catering income is going to go up. Yes, there's going to be increased catering costs, but you know, I think there's the opportunity for Spurs to make, you know, potentially, you know, £1.5 million, perhaps £2 million per event. And at a time when we're constantly talking about clubs losing money and clubs needing to be smarter, I think Spurs are going down the right route. The downside is that if you live near the stadium, you're now effectively going to be looking at, you know, 20 to 25 football matches, 30 non-football events. You've got 50 nights of people urinating in your garden, lobbing their litter, you know, around the streets where you live, making noise late at night because, yeah, the majority of these events will be evening events. And those people's concerns have to be taken into consideration as well. They moved into their houses, but normally, you know, many of them, when the old White Hart Lane was there, they knew the number of events, and now that's being doubled or more.
Yeah, I imagine that sort of behaviour will only happen when a band like the Chameleons are playing there, Kieran. I mean, everybody else would be very well behaved. What intrigues me, I mean, obviously this is good news for local businesses, local caterers, local pubs will be welcoming this. But as you say, in particular, local residents, I imagine, will be concerned, because one thing we all know about the new Tottenham ground, which is bigger than White Hart Lane, and therefore, obviously, holds a lot more people, the local transport links haven't been upgraded. So basically what you have, and we've all, most away fans will discover this, all you've got is a lot more, you know, I think we let about 8 Victoria Line trains go by before we could get on. So you're adding that 30 times. So you've got Tottenham, you know, people who live in Tottenham who are probably working in London, are now going to have that. So I don't think the residents will be happy at all. So at the same time, I can't see any way that Spurs won't be given planning permission for this, to be perfectly honest, because of the income, with the boost it will give to local businesses.
I think there is that, there is a business case for it going ahead, but it is not a it's not a victimless process, and you do feel a degree of sympathy for those people who are going to have disruption, and we'd all like to say, well, yeah, surely you know, somebody's going to a Taylor Swift or a Beyonce concert, they're not going to misbehave themselves at the end of it. People are just being people and making noise and celebrating. They've had a great time. Especially if you've got, you know, you've got family, you've got kids who are due at school the following morning, there are consequences.
The Taylor Swift fans will be too busy drinking in Vauxhall, trying to work out what pub it is that she mentioned in this, which is like one of the bizarrest boosts to any local economy. They'd be welcome in the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, Taylor Swift fans, I'm very sure. This last story, Ken, I'm just gonna let a little bit of the magic out for listeners here, Kieran, because I'm going to remind you that we have to do the introduction to our Stuart Taylor interview after this. Because, dear listeners, Kieran has a habit of forgetting that we have to do a little bit, and suddenly the screen goes blank and I have to WhatsApp and go, what? And it goes, oh, shit, sorry, and a spreadsheet to do, or Talk Sporter after me. So don't forget, don't hang up on me, Kieran. Now, this last story, you should never let the smoke out of the dressing room, as an old actor said to me. Never let the smoke out of the dressing room. And as I said to him, certainly not when it smells like that and there are policemen in the building. This last story, Kieran, is a slightly odd one in that there's a bidding war to replace Budweiser as the Premier League's official beer partner, but it's a bidding war between two unlikely candidates.
Yeah, I'm probably the least qualified person in the country to actually pick up on that particular point. I presume that Guinness and Heineken are different types of beer.
They are. Well, not only are they very different types of beer, Kieran, of course, one is a porter / stout, and one is a rather gassy lager, which is, Heineken's fine if you're in Belgium or Holland, you go, this is all right. But then you look at the 678 other beers available, you think, I'm not drinking that again. Why I say they're unlikely candidates, Kieran, is they're both more associated with rugby, or have been in the past, than with football.
Yes. I mean, Guinness has always very much closely aligned in itself with rugby. But what we have seen over recent years is the gentrification of football. The average age of a person attending a match in the Premier League is now 42. Whilst not getting on the soapbox of the traditional fan base now being priced out of the game through increased prices and so on, we also know that it's become increasingly expensive to become a football fan if you want to have a season ticket, if you want to have the new shirt each season and so on. And therefore, you know, I think Guinness in particular, it would be pitching itself for a slightly different demographic. But I think they will have done their research and realised that this is in fact an opportunity. And also, from the point of view of both of those brands, they are fully aware of the globalisation of football, and they are brands that want to globalise themselves. So if you've got, you know, a Japanese fan who comes across and tries their first Guinness, are they going to go home and tell their friends, there's this very strange stuff, which you know, perhaps you ought to try as well? So I think there are export links and so on. The Premier League's in a very strong position, you know, because Budweiser have been a partner of the Premier League for a long time, and the Premier League is a fantastic brand. You know, I say it on time and time again, 197 different countries, your official beer partner or your official tyre partner or your official cheese partner is going into the eyeballs of.
Yeah, not that long ago, in fact, once it was a Palace fan from Finland who arrived in the Porson's Arms, and the sight of him taking his first sip of Guinness is something that will live long in the memory. Two questions, Kieran. First of all, why are Budweiser being replaced as the Premier League's official beer partner? And second, how much is it likely to cost Guinness and Heineken to replace them? We said multi-million pound bidding wars. Can we put a precise figure on that?
The sky's the limit, but yeah, because once you get into an auction, it depends how important. If you take a look at the Premier League, we now have, it is now the Premier League. It's no longer the Carling Premier League or the Barclays Premier League. And what the Premier League have done is they said, because we've worked out we want to have official partners in X industries. The amount of money that the Premier League distributes between all 20 clubs is 140 million. I think it's about £140 million. And that will be with sort of, you know, seven or eight senior partners. So I think we're probably talking somewhere in the region of perhaps £10 to £12 million to be that partner, to be able to use the Premier League logo when you're doing promotions and so on. You might be able to extract more from that. And of course, that gets split equally between the 20 clubs. And the Premier League has got similar deals for quite a few products as well. Why is Budweiser moving on? It could be that it's decided it wants to target a different part of its marketing strategy. So, you know, whether it's push or pull in terms of the cessation of the relationship is down to the senior people at both parties.
And finally, Kieran, without getting too deep or rehearsing familiar arguments about the gambling industry in football, I think it's fair to reflect the comments of some representatives of the gambling industry in football this week along the lines of, yeah, we've seen smoking put aside. The relationship with football and gambling is clearly changing. And yet UEFA, the FA, the Premier League, perfectly happy to still take money from a product which, why absolutely legal and very popular and tasty, is the cause of many, as many or more social issues as gambling is.
Yes, yeah, and I can understand that. I think that's an element of whataboutery coming from the industry. I think the issue for me with gambling has always been that it should be doing more to protect consumers rather than, you know, I gamble, you gamble. You know, we don't have issues with it. That it's the lack of protection for the vulnerable. Yes, but if you're going to take that approach, there is no industry which could actually satisfy the Caesar's wife criteria. If you take finance, well, that, you know, the number of financial crises that we have, we've got issues of debanking in this country, we've got issues of the 2007-08 global economy crash, which was created by the gambling but the banking industry. If you look at aviation, well, that's not bad. That's not good for the environment. If you look at cars, the same. Where do you draw the line?
Yeah. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod, that'd be very kind of you. It'll also get you access to our chat community and our regular quizzes. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. If you'd like to buy our book or one of our other books or get yourself a Price of Football t-shirt, you can find details on the same website, priceoffootball.com. We'll be back tomorrow for you. I'm confusing myself now, Kieran, because in the real world it's Wednesday, is it? Yes, it is. So we'll be back on, yes, tomorrow with that interview with Stuart Andrew, the Minister for Sport. We're also tomorrow in the real world, Thursday, doing this very special interview for our very special anniversary. Can't tell you who it is, but two of you got it right, speculating on social media. And we'll be back on Monday with our questions pod. In the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, thank you so much, everybody, for engaging with us, for supporting the bits you don't like, and also holding us to account for the bits that you don't. Yeah, we do take all observations on board. Patreon is one way of interacting with the show, which we're very grateful. And you can also, if you go through, I think it's the £3 a month threshold, you get an advert-free version of the show even. There's another way you can support the show, and that's to give us a review. We're not begging for stars. We're just saying you can write whatever you want. It helps us in terms of the way that Apple and Spotify do their big algorithms. And you can even say you would rather have, and let's, you know, we are celebrating a big number in terms of the show, and you start to think of nostalgia. Even show you'd rather have the show presented by Gary Davis and Bruno Brooks. Oh. That's proper nostalgia, that is. If you want cheese, no better sources than that.
God, that would take a while, though, wouldn't it? They'd spend a lot of time just stroking their hair, wouldn't they, I imagine. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.